Okay, so welcome back. Take your seats. There are plenty of seats in the middle of the row, so don't get confined to the edges. And in the first session this afternoon, we have three talks. And the first talk is by Philip Bush. He's going to tell us about the famous Q equals your magnetic order in the pseudogap phase. So Philip, okay. You have 25 minutes. I'll give you warning.
Okay, so thank you, Antoine. Okay, so first I would like to thank Antoine and Louis for the invitation and to give me the possibility to present a quite different point of view to what you have been listening until since yesterday. Because here I will speak about Q equals zero magnetic order in the pseudogap phase of cuprate, and I think almost nobody has mentioned that previously. So the technique is about polarized neutron diffraction. So it's measured on two different spectrometers located in France. And so the take-home message like this. We observe this magnetic order in four different families. And that occurs at T star, at the high temperature line. So that's, I mean, everybody who is trying to explain the pseudo gap should explain that Q equals zero order. Meaning that there is a broken symmetry, which is a time reversal breaking symmetry. And for instance, I mean, this morning, I mean, I will, if I can, follow the comment of Andy, that I mean, I would like to push people who are doing DMFT to consider that result. Okay, so the measurement, what does it mean? It means that we have intra-unit cell antiferritism, means we have two antiparallel moments per in each unit cell. So that means that it cannot be copper spins which are responsible for that. I mean, that's really clear. So it means that we need another source of magnetism, meaning that oxygen should play a role. So the outline of my talk will be of four parts. So first, introduction to remind the older result. Then I will show some recent result about the fact that around optimal doping, we observe that this order is short range. Then I will discuss the one aspect of a measurement, which is the tilt of a moment. And then I will make some comments about the phase diagram in cuprates related to this Q equals zero and related to the charge density well and the nematic order. So this pseudogap line, I mean, we have discussed that a lot. I mean, the point I like to make here is that I think there is a common line between many different magnetic and charge properties, and this has been worked out by many people, for instance, Talon and Loram, and I think Alul also have done some work on that. And I think it's well established 20 years ago. So there is a common line where the properties change in the ITC cuprates. So if there is a common line, then we need to understand, is it a phase transition or not? And then which can be the broken symmetry? And of course, at the end of the day, I mean, if all of that is correct, then it would be the fluctuation of that phase which would be responsible for the ITC mechanism. Because that line should end up with a quantum critical point. So we follow one proposal. So that was the motivation. It doesn't mean that everything I will say will be explained by this theory. But that's the motivation of the measurement. That's the model proposed by Chandra Varma, which he proposed that there is some loop current in each unit cell, so going from copper to oxygen and then to copper. And there is two opposite loop current per unit cell, so then there is no net current. So as this, it is closed loop, it means that there is a moment pointing perpendicular to the copper-oxygen layer. So that's a Q equals to antiferritic order. So that phase have actually four different states. So depending on how you put the loop. And actually, it's a magnetoelectric phase in a sense that we can be described by a toroidal moment pointing along the diagonal. And so you can turn that vector by 90 degrees, and then you get the four different states. So as we work with a large single crystal, I mean, we consider we have the four domains, the four states are possible. So we just observe a pattern in Q space, which respects the C4 symmetry. So, but this model doesn't have this C4 symmetry because we have the contribution from the four different domains. So that's the pattern we have in Q space. So we have intensity, magnetic intensity from this model at Bragg position. So it's maximum at this position, typically, so 1, 0, L. and you have nothing around 0, 0 here. And we use a spin diffraction, spin polarized neutron technique, which is that that phase should flip the spin of a neutron, and otherwise the Bragg peak, the nuclear Bragg peak, which occurs at the same position in Q space, will not flip the neutron spin. And that's how we can make a difference. So it means that if we look at temperature dependence at the position where we expect something, we'll see the non-spin flip from the Bragg peak, the nuclear Bragg peak, and on top of that, in the spin flip channel, we observe some contribution related to this order. And if we do the same measurement at position where we expect nothing, we see just the same trend for both. So we use triple axis in Saclay called F4F1, where we have very good neutron polarization. It's one of the best spectrometers to do that. We have a polarization which is 96%. It's not 100%. I mean, perfect machine will be 100%. It's not. So it means that we have some difficulty related to that. But this number is very high. So we can consider the different cross-section from the nuclear scattering and the magnetic scattering. And depending on the product of the polymatrix and the M-perp, which is the cross product of Q and the Fourier transform of the magnetic moment, we can decide if what we observe is magnetic or not. Because that's, we should have some polarization, some evolution of intensity with the neutron polarization. And that's what we have done. So for instance, if we want to have the maximum of intensity in the spin flip channel, then we have to put the spin flip parallel to Q to have the maximum intensity in the spin flip channel. So we want to measure that term, and that term is observed on top of this thing, which is the non-spin flip part divided by the flipping ratio, which is the quality of a polarization of a spectrometer. So we have this this relation, and that's what we have done in YBCO. So here, for instance, that's a non-spin flip, so it just increases with decreasing temperature, like the Debye-Waller factor. And in the spin flip, we have, on top of that, we have this additional feature here. And it's actually, it's quite a sharp feature. And we've done this measurement with Ermuk, and he said when he saw that, it's pretty sharp. So he was convinced from day one looking at this data. So that's a measurement at the Bragg position. And so we did measurement at position where we expect nothing, and we indeed see nothing. Okay, I will not show that because it has been done a long time ago. So here it's a measurement at a point which is this Bragg position, 101. And here I show we can make some scan across that point, and that's the scan which is shown here. So we do the difference between low temperature minus high temperature to get the magnetic peak, because you have to remove the part of a spectrum, the part of scattering which is related to the nuclear scattering. And by making the temperature difference, we can do that. And then here we compare in magenta the magnetic part with the, in blue, the nuclear part. And we see that both have the same shape, meaning that we have a long range in the limit of our resolution, which is not very bright, let's say, but it's something that the correlation along the C-axis is larger than this value. Okay, so we did observe that for many different samples and different families. And for example, in YBCO, the onset that we observe this magnetic scattering that we call T-mag, match very well the T star that we obtained from resistivity. Exactly matching the same thing. And after that, people have looked at different techniques to see if there is some agreement with that. And for instance, there is ultrasound spectroscopy, which indicates there is 2 points here, which indicate thermodynamic transition at the same temperature as the one we observe as T star. So all of that collapse on the same line. After that, there is some anomaly in the uniform susceptibility. There is optical birefringence, which starts in the terahertz regime, which starts at the same temperature. There is also a polar car effect, but which occurs slightly below. But as Steve has said yesterday, I mean, the car effect see as many things we want in some sense, as far as it doesn't seem to be only the time reversal breaking symmetry. Although neutron, I mean, the first thing that neutron are seeing, as it is magnetism, it means that this line, there is already a time reversal breaking symmetry at this line. You can see symmetry can be broken. I will say that at the end. But the message that you can take the first is that it breaks time reversal symmetry. So it is inside the intra-unit cell. And that agrees with the measurement of STM from Seamus Davis, where we observe also some intra-unit cell nematicity. And at least it means that something is happening inside the unit cell. I think that's some important message. Of course, I mean, one difficulty since the beginning, I mean, it hasn't changed, the fact that this thing has not been seen by local probe. I mean, people have tried many different systems. Some arguments are good, other arguments are not as good. But typically, we can say that they don't see it, clearly. So the only, I mean, simple argument which can explain why, it's a time scale, in the sense that we do observe something at a scale which is a nanoseconds. So it's not static in the sense of this local probes. So that's a way out, let's say. Maybe there is other possibility, but that's the most likely one, I would say. Okay, so this was in YBCO. We did also the same in Mercury cuprate one layer, which is a simple clean system. We also look in the BISCO 2212, which is not easy neutron because it's difficult to grow large synchron crystal. And people have done before some dichroism in photoemission. So we repeat the same kind of measurement in two samples, underdoped and overdoped, and we do observe the same trend versus doping. So we do observe something in the underdope and nothing in the overdope samples. And we get a phase diagram which agrees very well with the pseudo gap determined by photoemission in BISCO. The blue points are coming from Vishik and coworkers, and our red points are going at the same on the same line, meaning that actually here T star has a flattening here in this doping range. So that's an introduction to remind you where we are, what we had for many years. And now I will show some recent results. So showing that now we look around optimal doping. And for a long time, we didn't look for optimal doping because the signal was much weaker. So that means that we have to push further the experiment to be able to see something. And that's what we have done here. And actually, looking at the same Bragg peak, we do see something. But as you can see, this difference is much weaker. Actually, if we compare now the two different samples, we see that it's four times weaker in that around optimal doping than in the underdoped regime. So it means that the intensity has fallen down a lot. Although the temperature where it occurs is quite similar. Okay, so we use a different spectrometer, which is a multi-detector spectrometer with polarized neutron. And so that's very useful because there's no movement at all. So it means that the polarization is very stable. And using that machine, it means that every detector is saying, so you measure many Qs at the same time. So you can do Q scan, meaning that in the HOL scattering plane, we for one position of a sample, we measure many different Qs along this blue line. So we use that, and that's the result. So starting from high temperature where we have nothing, no peak, and then at low temperature, 200, and then 300, and 100, we do observe a peak here. And actually that peak is observed at a position which is slightly off of a Bragg peak. That's we did it just to have more sensitivity in the sense that the nuclear Bragg peak is very strong. So going slightly away, we could see something, because Bragg peak is weaker, but the magnetism, as I will show later, remains about the same. So from the width of that peak, we can determine the correlation length, and it's not long range anymore, but it's like 20 angstrom, 20 lattice unit. And actually it is larger than the charge density wave correlation length for the same doping. So what we observe at higher temperatures than the charge density wave, and has a longer correlation length. And that's the global temperature dependence of that feature. And we don't see any clear evidence from the correlation length with temperature. But mostly it's related to the fact that we are limited by the technique. So we use to gain some statistics to have a better way to see the measurement, we integrate intensity over some Q range. And doing that, we can follow the L dependence of that. And we do the intensity versus temperature for two different L. And you can see, actually, the intensity starts even above Tmag. So it means if we had a true phase transition, which is not the case, that regime would be pre-transitional diffuse scattering. So it's not yet the ordered phase. And only below Tmag, you have the ordered phase. And from the evolution at different L, we can tell about the correlation length along the C-axis. And that corresponds to these two points here. which is coming from this measurement, and these two black points are coming from the other experiment. And you can see you have some dependent along the c-axis, perpendicular to the copper oxygen layer. And it is in between the 2D system, which will be that line, and different from the Bragg long-range order, which would be corresponding to that width here. So we have a system which is hardly correlated along the c-axis. And at 100 K, it's half a c for the correction length. So we some time ago, we plot magnetic intensity, so in absolute units, in millibar, versus the temperature where we observe the feature. And we observe a trend first at for the higher when Tmag is large, so it means strongly underdoped. Then it was proportional; both was proportional to each other, which is quite expected in mean field approach. And typically, the moment for these points here correspond to 0.1 mu b. Typically, of course, this is very rough estimation because there is few things that we don't know. For instance, the form factor, maybe this kind of thing. But typically, it would be this order of magnitude for the moment. So we see two regimes. Here, first, it follows Tmag, but then after that, it doesn't follow. Tmag remains high, but the intensity is dropped down. And actually, our new sample is coming here. And actually, it shows that there is two regimes. So we have a long-range correlation in that doping range, and short-range correlation along that doping. And actually, if we integrate along in Q, especially along the C-axis, the intensity for that sample, I mean, intensity is going back here. So it means the local moment is proportional to Tmag. But the peak intensity is going down. So another aspect of this measurement is we could follow the tilt of a moment. So that was a question for many years. So to look for that, we use the Newton polarization, meaning that we turn the polarization, and there is a sum rule depending on how we put the polarization, and the intensity along that direction for polarization along that direction should be the sum of these two terms. And so we measure that. And that correspond. These two terms correspond to these two graphs here, and this one corresponds to this one. So it means that this sum rule is okay in the sense that that plus that is equal to that part. So that's meaning that we have really a magnetic scattering. So also we can see that we have intensity here, which is non-zero, and this one is not equal to that, meaning that actually the moment is not along the c-axis, and that actually we found a moment which is tilted by about 45 degrees. So we repeat that in a Mercury 1 layer, and we have the same conclusion. From here, it's Tmag for that sample of 75 K is a room temperature. So it's very consistent, and we have also an angle of a moment which is tilted by some amount. We repeat the same in BISCO. Here, the data are less good because the sample are less good. I mean, that's simply as that. And typically here, it seems that the moment is tilted less, but it's still as this thing full sample corresponds to underdoped, and open sample is overdoped. So you can compare both. And you see that the underdoped samples are intensity are slightly larger, meaning that there is a non-zero tilt. Although, I mean, within the robot, it could be zero. Okay, so recently we looked for that part in that sample near optimal doping. And also we can play with the polarization the same way, and we can determine exactly the component along the c-axis and the component along the AB plane. So we can determine really these two things. And we can plot that versus temperature from the data I've shown before. And that we get here. And actually we realize, and it was quite a surprise, that they have a different temperature dependence. So they don't occur at the same temperature. So first at high temperature, so above Tmag, so in the regime where you have only fluctuations, even more fluctuations, I would say, then you have only the c-axis component. And only below Tmag, you have this in-plane component start to grow. It means that it has an Ising character above Tmag. So this is what it is expected for the loop current model of Varma. But and below and at low temperature, we have a tilt because from the ratio of this intensity over this one, we have a tilt which is consistent with the previous measurements. And that. That picture actually agrees also from the measurement made of a diffuse scattering, means the measurement that we do away from this line, so at position around 0.9. So we are not we just move away from the Bragg position. And if you follow the temperature dependent at this position, you get that for different polarization. And we do see you have a decrease of intensity with temperature, meaning that there is a transfer of intensity from this position in Q space to the Bragg position with temperature. So this position here corresponds here. So when we cool down, it goes down, and here the intensity is going up as I shown before. This is very consistent. And if we do the difference of that, we do observe a peak of this thing exactly at the position T mag at the temperature where we observe this transition. So we are really a critical behavior of magnetism from the measurement away from the Bragg peak, which is typically what people will expect for a magnetic transition. I mean, when they move away from the Bragg peak, they measure the diffuse scattering and they observe a peak in a cusp in the magnetic density. So that's exactly that. Okay, so why we have this tilt? So we have a picture in temperature which is like that. So we have at high temperature a moment pointing along the c-axis and a tilt at low temperature. So there is different model which try to explain that. I mean, Chandrayama first proposed spin orbit coupling, which doesn't work because it's too small. He proposed a quantum superposition of four states, which I guess it's a purely quantum effect, which can correspond. That's all I can say. There is also a proposal that the tilt is related to the fact that actually the loop currents are on the octahedra, so that's why there is a tilt. And actually this doesn't work because we don't expect from that model a tilt for L equal to zero, which is what we observe. And there is a recent proposal, which is interesting, but it is interesting in the sense that it indicates that there is other kind of operators that neutron can measure if inversion is broken. But that's interesting, but for the moment it's difficult to tell if it's really relevant or not for the problem. Okay, so the last minutes, I would like to make some comment about the phase diagrams. So that's the version of the phase diagram. So we have a magnetic order at higher temperatures than all the charge order and so on. So that exactly matches the T star line. So I guess that corresponds to the first broken symmetry in the problem. So I think that should be considered in theories. And for instance, it reminds quite well what Andre have shown this morning, that at low doping, we have a spin density wave. So I would say it's a question to the mode physics. Then you have this transition around the 9%, where the system is really metallic with the pocket. And the charge order occurs in the same range, meaning that both things are related. I mean, they are not disconnected, obviously. It occurs in the same, exactly in the same doping range. So they talk to each other. And that's for YBCO. And you can see also there is also a flattening of T-mag, which departs actually from the line here for the optimal doping sample. Okay. So also this phase diagram agree with the anisotropic Nernst effect, which had been published by Louis Taillefer 5 years ago. And we actually, our line matched quite well this line. That's not the same as the one we discussed yesterday. But that really corresponds. So here we have we have really the same. I mean that T star, this anisotropic Nernst effect as it defined at the time, agrees with our T mag. And so we looked some time ago about a sample, which is around this doping, and it's a twin-free sample, so we can measure if there is some nematicity or not. And so that's a result. So that's a result for 100, and so we do see some magnetic order again around this here. And if we look for the intensity along A star and B star, we actually see a quite difference. So it occurs at the same temperature. I mean, we can say it's really the same, but the amplitude of that is quite different. So it's about a factor 2 to 3 difference, and it's larger along the A axis and the B axis. So that means that we have a structure factor which have in-plane anisotropy. So that means that there is a breaking of a C4 symmetry. So I would say it's a nematicity. Of course, it's magnetic. It's a magnetic intensity. And that occurs at that position here in the phase diagram. So just at T star. Okay. So what we can say from that, I guess one important message is that fact all of that is related to oxygen. So we I would say the nematic phase seen by the STM and the fact that everything we can, to explain our data, we can either take the loop current of Chandra Varma. Also, we can consider some model where we have moments on the oxygens, and which are opposites, so it's a curative order also, and that also can explain the data as well. And I guess in the recent model explaining the charge density wave, the modulation is larger at the oxygen site. So I guess that's the way both things can be related. Okay, so just to finish, I'd like to thank my collaborator. So it's a long work, about 10 years. So I work with Ivan Sidis, who is here in the audience. So we start that work with a thesis of Benoît Fouquet, who is also here, with Victor Balidon, which I think I saw him this morning, yeah, here. And now it's with Lucille Magentreau, who is also here. And so it's a long work. It will go smoothly, but slowly, because it's difficult measurement. And so we use many different samples from many different places in the different system. So in the YBCO, from Max Planck Institute, but as well from a collaboration with Ermuk from Oak Ridge. In Mercury, we have a strong collaboration with Martin Graven. We have to command many different samples to be able to see something. So we did a measurement on l'interstitium with Joël Meuseau. And recently, we developed a collaboration with the group Isabelle Lafez in Blois, in France, to grow a large single crystal of BISCO to look for the same thing in BISCO. Okay, thank you very much.